It's a grand river that is facing multiple challenges. Welcome to Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. I'm Salwa Khan. The Rio Grande River begins with snowmelt in the San Juan Mountains of Colorado and flows south through New Mexico, a small part of Oklahoma, into Texas, and then into Mexico. Over the years, people have placed enormous demands on the river's water, which is mostly used for agriculture, but also by cities. Far less water is left for natural ecosystems and wildlife. Climate change has resulted in reduced snowmelt, increasing droughts, destruction of riparian areas, and of habitat for fish, birds, and other animals. Since the mid-1990s, long sections of the river dry up between late spring and fall. One stretch of the river, called the Forgotten Reach, has been dry for decades. One mission of World Wildlife Fund is to protect and reinvigorate the Rio Grande. I talked to Enrique Prunes, manager of the Rio Grande Rio Bravo program at World Wildlife Fund. He's been working for 16 years on conservation and water management issues. I asked him for his assessment of the state of the Rio Grande and about the work of the World Wildlife Fund, also called WWF.
WWF has had the Rio Grande and the Chihuahuan Desert as a priority region for conservation for over 20 years, and we have been active in the region for 20 plus years. Right now, the Rio Grande, I will say, is in a very dire situation. I mean, you have probably seen the news about river drying in the Albuquerque area or other places, which is the second time it happens in the last 3 years. And before that, it happened in the 80s. Although the river dries downstream of Socorro, New Mexico, almost every year, that's further downstream of Albuquerque. The river has lost 80% of its historic flows throughout the basin. That is how the river used to be, you know, 100 years ago. It's 80% less water in the river than what it used to of the natural flows. Some reaches, like the Forgotten Reach between El Paso and Presidio, where the river starts to form the border between the U.S. and Mexico, have been completely dry for decades, and that's why it's called the Forgotten Reach. Similarly, river drying is dangerously increasing in the Big Bend area, in the Big Bend National Park, and other protected areas in Mexico in the last decade. So this is becoming a recurring thing in many stretches, and you know, that puts the river under a lot of pressure. The river and everything, every life that depends on the river, from species, plants, and us humans. So just imagine what happens to all aquatic species and riparian habitats when the river dries.
Enrique, you're on the freshwater team at World Wildlife Fund. What do you do that contributes toward protecting and revitalizing the river?
So WWF, the freshwater team, works globally in many basins. The Rio Grande, Rio Bravo is one of our priority river basins. And the work that I'm leading in the Rio Grande has river connectivity and environmental flows, which is the adequate flows to sustain river functions, as the core of our conservation strategy. And we do many things around that, and we work on multiple fronts, from developing state-of-the-art foundational science that we hope will guide decision-making and investments in the years to come. We work on policy and advocacy just to raise awareness of the importance of the river for public and private funding and programs, even international initiatives. We do work on ecosystem restoration to improve river corridor connectivity and enhance natural distributed storage, just meaning storing more water in the wetlands and the watershed and having impact on those local ecosystems that sustain some of the important species that we want to conserve. We have conducted environmental flow assessments for the entire basin in some regions and other water related studies. And finally, the other piece of work we do, because between 80 to 90% of the direct water use in the basin goes to irrigated agriculture. For some years, we have worked with irrigation districts in Mexico, and recently we have conducted research basin-wide on just to understand water use in agriculture. What are the most dominant crops? Which crops are consuming more water? What are these crops? And even research on, you know, assessing alternatives to reduce water by changing crops or different crop mixtures that could also maintain or increase farmers' revenues. But all of that needs to be grounded in, you know, what the agricultural community, what the farmers need. So we are we just started a project with a couple of partners in New Mexico to conduct a farmer survey to better understand what farmers are struggling with, what are the challenges, and work with them to identify potential solutions to address water use in agriculture, but also maintaining farmers' livelihoods and economic activities.
How was the Rio Grande River formed?
Going back millions of years, the Rio Grande was formed by what is called the Rio Grande Rift. So a rift is a geological process where the tectonic plates are separating and the earth crust is thinning. And that is in part what formed the valley or the depression where the river flows today. In terms of the people, it is important to highlight that, you know, there are in New Mexico, there are 22 tribal nations and pueblos that have been in the region for time immemorial. Each of them is an independent nation. In the Mexican side, in the mountain range in Chihuahua, the headwaters of the Rio Conchos, which is a tributary to the Rio Bravo, there are four indigenous groups that have also inhabited the area for millennia. Then, you know, in the 1500s, Spanish settlers established in northern Mexico, and some of those groups migrated and continued their journey to what is now New Mexico around the 1600s. And those groups brought with them their irrigation system that is called acequias, which is a community-driven agricultural system that to this day continues to be part of their culture and livelihood in northern New Mexico and Chihuahua, Mexico, too. Acequia is basically the Spanish word for a ditch or an irrigation canal. But these communities, you know, farm the land in this acequia system, which is, you know, a community driven agricultural system. And I was saying that those communities established were Spanish settlers that established in the in northern Mexico and in New Mexico between the 1500s and the 1600s. And there are over 800 of these acequia communities in New Mexico. And then, you know, moving forward in history, you have the modern urban cities and larger irrigation districts that are more recent, including many industry sectors that operate and serve from all over the basin. And that includes, you know, manufacturing, tech, food and beverage, and some big cities in Colorado, in New Mexico, and Texas, of course, in northern Mexico. And you can just imagine like all of this diversity of cultures and people coexist in the Rio Grande, Rio Bravo, which I think is fascinating.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan, here today with Enrique Prunes, Program Manager at the World Wildlife Fund. We were talking about the river, the Rio Grande River. What are some of the ecosystems and the wildlife that historically were supported by the river?
I will say not just historically, but to this day, the river does support a couple of important terrestrial ecoregions. So they're throughout the basin, from Colorado, New Mexico, Texas, and on the Mexican side of the basin. The river crosses forested areas in the headwaters of the basin that are home to, you know, global wild biodiversity hotspots that have very rich diversity of plant species. Then it crosses the Chihuahuan Desert. The river is actually at the heart of the Chihuahuan Desert, which is one of the three most biodiverse deserts in the world. And then as you get further downstream, close to the ocean, then it crosses the Great Plains, which is home to some intact grasslands that are important for migratory birds. And of course, all the riparian habitats and wetlands and springs that are the lifeblood of all of these species in this landscape. In terms of, you know, species, the Rio Grande Bravo is home or flyway to over 500 migratory birds. Half of the fish species in the system are endemic, meaning unique to this area. It's home to 130 mammal species and over 30,000 native plant species. So yeah, the river still sustain, you know, a rich diversity of species and ecosystems, but struggling, I will say.
Okay, so the river flow is shrinking and in fact drying up in certain areas. What does that mean for the people who live in that area?
It has, of course, impact on the ecosystem and the species that depend on it. And some people that recreate and that goes to the river, to their canoe or walk or birdwatch or just, you know, enjoy, are suffering because they don't have that these days, and they are seeing the river suffering. But in terms of, you know, the water supply that the river provides for agriculture, farmers in some regions, like in the Middle Rio Grande Conservancy District in New Mexico, are not receiving any water this year for their, you know, for irrigation. And you can imagine how difficult that is for the farming community. That means also that cities need to manage or supplement water with wells. That also means, you know, that the in terms of water rights, the most senior water right holders are the ones that receive water first. And it has ripple effects, right? Is the river dries, the habitats and species suffer, but then there is no water for irrigation. Cities also need to, you know, manage and make best use of the water that they have. So it's really impacting communities. And
when the river runs dry, as it has in Albuquerque, New Mexico, does it then pick up again further down?
So all the way from, let's say, Colorado to New Mexico, to Albuquerque, usually the river has water. In Albuquerque, it rarely dries. It has happened twice in recent years, but before that, it didn't happen for 40 years. But downstream of Albuquerque, the river does not pick up, really. Generally speaking, the river dries more often downstream of, as it gets closer to Elephant Butte Reservoir, further downstream from Socorro, which is downstream from Albuquerque. It might get a little bit of water from monsoons, if there are like some rains in the summer or return flows from the irrigation districts, and even discharge of the wastewater plant treatment plants. But generally speaking, it does not pick up, and it even, you know, dries more often downstream. Then if you continue all the way to Las Cruces, same thing. And then I refer to this forgotten ridge between El Paso and Presidio, Texas, that has been dried for, you know, decades now. And that's why it's called the Forgotten Ridge. Similar thing is happening in the Big Bend. I mentioned that too, that the river is increasingly drying in that region too.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan here with Enrique Prunes, Rio Grande Program Manager, World Wildlife Fund. As far as agriculture, what are farmers growing? And are some of them getting water because they're located in areas where the river is flowing?
All the irrigation districts are suffering water shortages. In some other years, they might, you know, get some of the water they need or their full allocation if it's a very good year. So 90% of the water that is consumed in the basin, the direct water consumption in the basin goes to irrigated agriculture. 60% of that It goes to cattle feed crops such as alfalfa, hay, and pasture, and that's for cattle, dairy. Between 5 or 10%, depending on where you are in the basin, goes to cotton, and then between 5 and 10% also goes to pecans, depending on where you are. And there are a few other crops, but those three cattle feed crops, again, alfalfa, hay, and pasture, are the most dominant ones, and then followed by cotton and pecans.
And then how much is used by the municipal water systems?
So this might surprise you. Only 2% of the water, direct water use in the basin, goes to municipal and domestic, and then around 8% goes to power generation or thermoelectric plants. So that's the other 10%.
Since most of the water is used to grow crops for livestock, it seems clear that changing diets from meat to plant-based is important. In other words, growing crops to feed people rather than animals, wouldn't that be a solution as well?
It's part of the solution, but I think we also need to understand there's a cultural thing, right? There are a lot of ranching communities. Some of these farmers have been doing that for generations, and there's an element here of what new things can be done, but also how do we preserve some of that cultural identity and history of in the region. It's a very, difficult balance, and definitely is going to be a conversation that is going to continue for years.
So there's a lot of water from the river used for animal agriculture and water use by people in cities. There's the drought, the increasing heat. What are the things that people can do to preserve and protect the Rio Grande and the natural ecosystems that depend on it?
First, I think we need to be conscious about minimizing our water use, and that goes on different ways, to having some, more efficient toilets, or even, reducing the watering the lawn, or things like, reducing food loss and waste. 40% of the food humans produce is wasted. So reducing food loss and waste can help. And then, thinking about engaging more, or at least stay informed about advocacy efforts for water policy reform or improvements in water management in your, community, or in your watershed, or in your state, if there are opportunities for people to, be more informed and engage in those efforts. I think that's a next step. And sometimes, many of the conservation groups like WWF and many NGOs do ecosystem restoration projects. And sometimes there are like opportunities for people to volunteer and support in those efforts. So if there's a project around your community where you can participate and be engaged in, restoring ecosystems or protecting your local stream, I think that will be also, something else people can do to protect their rivers.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan here with Enrique Prunes, Rio Grande Program Manager for World Wildlife Fund, or WWF. Since agriculture is a major user of water from the Rio Grande, what strategies can you develop or promote to lessen the strain on the river?
So on previous question, I mentioned a little bit about some of the research we are doing in there's a paper that we published that is about opportunities to optimize crop mixes that can reduce water use but maintain farmers' revenues. Or increase farming revenues. And some of the things coming out of that research, just to put an example, is maybe growing more green chilies instead of alfalfa could have a positive impact on both the farmers' revenue and reducing water use. But then there are like a lot of challenges that farmers face in considering those things, like lack of labor, not a reliable source of water, so on and so forth. So to that extent, we are doing conducting some farmer surveys to with some local universities and local water agencies to understand what are the perspectives of farmers in terms of water use and their challenges and the solutions that they see. So I think instead of, you know, what the strategy is just working with the farmers to help them and understand what can be done. There are a few examples out there of things that have been working. For example, in the Middle Rio Grande Conservancy District in Albuquerque area in New Mexico, they have an environmental water leasing program that basically pays farmers to fallow land temporarily for a season. And that water is then used for a conservation pool to maintain river flows during the slow flows in the summer. There are efforts going on in the San Luis Valley in Colorado to also, you know, manage water demand and work with farmers to retire wells and compensate that. There are examples in on the Mexican side. WWF worked with a group of farmers for many years on, you know, improving their governance so they can access more federal funding to improve irrigation infrastructure. So those kinds of things are a few examples, but I think overall is just listening and working with farmers to understand what they can do and what they need to implement some of the solutions.
The agricultural use of water is affecting the area as a whole, affecting wildlife, biodiversity along the river. How do you reconcile the two?
Agricultural regions have been working and present in this river system for, you know, centuries, that I think everything is so integrated now that to some extent the river also depends on the return flows of these irrigation districts. And even some of the wildlife, like some birds, depend on having some of the, you know, crops there, some of the agricultural lands, like sandhill cranes, for example, that do need some, you know, cornfields to eat in the winter. So it is a very intricate, way of being between the river and the agricultural community and the riparian habitats. So it's a balance between, you know, maintaining the river flows and also understanding that this agricultural, you know, lands have been there for so long that is part of the system now.
So what do you see as the future of the river?
With increasing temperatures, most of the future scenarios indicating that there's probably going to be less water in the river than what it is currently, even, you know, that it has been depleted for so long. And then the water shortages are some of these cities and agricultural communities are facing, and increasing conflicts over interstate and international water sharing agreements. I think we have a long way, a future that is going to be difficult. But I think maintaining the conversation, maintaining investment in testing and implementing some of these solutions, working with all the stakeholders, everyone involved in water management or water use, and maintaining that for, you know, consistently for years to come, I think we can find solutions to address water scarcity, to find some balance in how we use water, and maintaining some of the river flows that are needed. But I think it's going to require a lot of conversations and everyone involved and engaged, and considerable investment from both public entities and private.
A lot of this appears to be about changing how people think about things. I mean, we talked about diet, which is one thing, but then, for example, outdoor water use, that's a big user of water, especially for lawns and growing plants that aren't native to your region. Is that right?
Yeah, there's definitely some, you know, behavioral change involved, and I think many people, you know, living in the Rio Grande Basin, it's already doing a lot of that. Cities like Albuquerque or El Paso have managed to reduce water use despite population growth, which is a pretty impressive effort. And definitely the decisions that consumers make on, you know, what to buy, what to eat, or what to do at home, even the small things will have a positive impact. And some of that is, I see some of that happening, but you're right. I think there's more of that needed, more communication campaigns, environmental education campaigns, just raising awareness of the dire situation that we're facing in the Rio Grande in terms of water scarcity, but also the river drying.
In your own life with your family, do you have certain things you do to conserve water?
That's my job. I'm very engaged in this, so I already do that. I work on water issues every day. And I do go out a lot and try to enjoy the river and nature. But at home, I do try to minimize water use as much as I can. Again, I try to reduce food loss and waste to a minimum, because I know that's a big part. And, you know, we mentioned agriculture. So imagine if 40% of the food that we produce is lost in the process, you're reducing food loss and waste at home will have a huge impact on the agricultural footprint on water. And just try to, you know, whenever possible, take short showers, the small things that I do at home and that I do with my family. But overall, I it's all about water security and food security for the years to come in a changing climate, in a future where we're going to see temperatures increase and probably less water available. So if the river is drying, agriculture is going to follow with water shortages, cities will follow. And maintaining some water in the river, it's an indicator that the system is some sort of imbalance, and that will provide some water for everyone forever, right? So I think just that message of people understanding that having a healthy functioning river is insurance that we will have water for other uses in the future.
That's all for now. Thanks to our guest, Enrique Prunes, Rio Grande Program Manager with World Wildlife Fund, and thanks so much to you for listening. Our website is mothering-earth.com. Until next time, this is Salwa Khan signing off for Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. The views and opinions expressed on Mothering Earth do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of this station.